Welcome back to episode 342 of the Pesky Report, brought to you by Beyond the Monster. I'm Matthew Corey, and I am joined today by Kevin, and potentially a little bit later on, Tim. We'll see if he ends up making it on, but we are glad to be here, and this is the official podcast of Blowing Leads Late in Games. And I am deciding to, if you're watching any video back of this, I've decided, you know, I'm not going to cut my hair now because I want to fit in with the Orioles prospect group. You know, that they all have the blonde locks sticking out and curls, you know, behind the hat. So I'm trying to work on that. And definitely could be feeling better about the Red Sox. Kevin, how are you feeling?
We could be feeling better. Definitely feeling better. I feel like this team has somehow found their way to lose games they shouldn't, and that's the bottom line. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. Story goes down, defense just forgets how to play defense. You see that trickle down to the guys that are on the mound when they know they don't have guys behind them that can make plays, routine plays. And so it's frustrating, you know, getting swept by the O's. Very young, talented team. The O's are a very, very, very good team. Not going to take that away from them. But it's just the way the game ended tonight was just brutal.
No, it was not a pleasant way to – I thought we were at least going to avoid a sweep. I was pretty stoked for how that was going. Just didn't end up that way. But before we get into kind of diving into dissecting this series against the O's, go and follow us on the socials if you haven't yet, at Pesky Report on Instagram, Twitter. We're on Facebook as well, and I guess we're on Threads. I can't forget that. We're putting out content throughout the week, and we want to make sure that we're in touch with you guys. And let us know if you have any questions you want us to answer on the pod. Send us a message at Pesky Report on Twitter is probably the fastest way to get any contact, but we'd love to stay in touch, any of our personals as well. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we greatly appreciate taking a little an extra second to leave us a 5-star rating or review. And we certainly appreciate that extra time that you've taken out as well.
Absolutely.
Some people were a little bit confused because we're obviously recording today. It's Thursday night, immediately following the sweep from the Orioles, and this is the first baseball MLB episode since last Thursday to hit the podcast feeds. So I wanted to kind of give you guys an insight into what we're doing with the Pesky Report currently. So we on the weekends, we actually have our weekday crew and our weekends crew, along with our minor league crew. And the crew that records on the weekends has been testing out a new format where it's live streaming content. And so, Kevin, I know you were a part of that the first week that you guys did it. And then last weekend, it was also pretty successful. It's going to be a conversation more around the entirety of Major League Baseball. I think it's through Twitch. We're going to be uploading to YouTube as well with that video content. And that's just going to be a way for people to interact in real time and get some engagement, get some questions, talk about the topics that are hot and on everyone's mind. That's going to include talking about the Red Sox, but it's also going to include talking about other teams as well. We're working on a way to figure out the best way to clip the Red Sox content from that conversation and put it on our podcast feeds. We haven't quite got there yet, so we're working on that for you guys. But as of right now, the only podcast-only episode for Major Leagues is going to be the weekday crew. So whatever series wraps up during the week, we'll be talking about that on podcast format. If there's a series that's taking place over the weekend, we'll be looking for that to be discussed by our weekend crew, potentially through that live stream format. So more to come. Hopefully we'll be able to put that content into podcast format as well. But for right now, if you're looking for that content, you can kind of look out for the link that we usually tweet out on Sunday nights. Join us live. I think it was 7:10 or something like that.
It was like 7:30 the first Sunday that we did it, and I thought it was a success. You know, it's fun to interact, and people who are following us, they can post questions to the live feed. We answer them as we're streaming. So it's just another way to get content out. It's another way to interact with people who follow the Pesky Report.
Awesome. You might see either of us on those streams as well. Yeah. But for now, let's break down this Orioles series. So, not the desired effect. I know the first thing that stands out was the pitching from the starting pitching performances were actually pretty good in this series. Pretty good.
Yes.
I posted on Twitter earlier today that the Red Sox starting pitching is phenomenal through five innings, but after that, it's like they just lose their confidence completely. Not really sure what's happening with that. Do you think there's going to be a fix anytime soon to this fifth inning blunders from like Cutter Crawford or, you know, Garrett Whitlock?
I think Bailey is still trying to figure out how to stretch this rotation out. Right, we saw in the first two series there was a game plan of around 80-85 pitches. We're gonna see what Bailey's game plan is as he wants these starters to go deeper into ball games. But I thought Lou brought up a really good point during the broadcast tonight. Is you had two series now with the Orioles where people are picking up on the Bailey effect. Right, the Bailey lab, what he's doing with these starting pitchers, how they don't like to throw the fastball, how they like to throw everything with movement, you know, off speed, you know, other pitches with movement. And when you give teams, especially like the Orioles that are that fundamentally sound and that talented, when you give them a script, when you give them a game plan, they're gonna execute. So it's going to be interesting to see how the season progresses, what Bailey does with his game plan, how he switches things up. I don't think we're going to see too many of these starters going really deep into games. It's still April. I mean, we're recording now April 11th. We'll see what happens. But my intuition right now is, you know, we lost the series to a really good team. And Bailey's going to have to make the adjustments going forward on how he wants to attack, because people are going to prepare. You know, the rest of the league is going to catch up. And as much as I love how the starting pitchers have looked, you know, getting swept is not the desired outcome.
You know, and I know there's something to be said about teams catching on, and I was muted there for a second.
Yeah, I thought I was lost in space for a second, dude.
Wouldn't be the first time that I've tried to do something while muted with the audio issues I've been having lately. But teams are not only just catching on to the strategy, but it's also like a lack of control from the Red Sox as well. Yeah. Like Cutter Crawford, like couldn't throw a strike to save his life in the fifth inning against the Angels. Fifth inning against the Orioles. Not sure what happened there. Still really, really good ERA in both of those games. While we're talking about Cutter Crawford, though, real quick, because, you know, I think there's something that has to be said about just how much in control they were against the Seattle Mariners in that first series. And it wasn't just the game plan. It was like pounding the strike zone, throwing strikes, not walking anyone, to then now these guys are walking three, four guys a game, and it's like, not sure what's happening, right? So there's something going on with a lack of control. And I think that we need some Bailey smart enough to be able to figure out what's going on and try to get these guys back in control. But you saw it at the end of the Cutter Crawford start. The only pitch that he could trust was his sweeper. He was throwing the sweeper every single pitch because he couldn't throw a strike with his fastball, his curveball, anything else. So it was really weird to see that. And that just tells me there's a lack of control going on. You don't throw eight straight sweepers if that wasn't the case.
No, eight straight sweepers is not ideal, and I'm sure that's not part of the game plan that Bailey has for a guy like Cutter Crawford, a guy who typically hovers around the strike zone a lot. It might just be he needs to be stretched out a little bit. The two back-to-back five inning, you know, kind of collapse, I guess I would put it in Cutter Crawford's appearances, is the lack of command I don't want to blow it out of proportion. I don't want to come from this like doomsday approach because we are so early into the season. I do believe that these are things that are tangible. They're workable. They're things that can be figured out. But as you're figuring it out, other teams are figuring you out. So you gotta, you're like playing with a double-edged sword right there. But I don't have too much worry into Cutter. I mean, if it needs to be stretched out a little bit, then that's fine. Let's see how he looks towards the end of April, you know, and in May as well. And then obviously as the season progresses.
Yeah. And so fun fact on Cutter Crawford, like, cause we don't want to just be doom and gloom. Let's talk about some positives. This is from @SoxNotes on Twitter. JP Long had that Cutter Crawford is one of 56 pitchers to make 3+ starts this season. He leads that group in ERA. 0.57 is his ERA. Yep. 0.57. He leads an opponent batting average, 0.127, and opponent slugging percentage, 0.127. Crawford is the only pitcher in that group to allow 0 extra base hits this season.
Those numbers really speak to the vision of what a lot of these pitchers like to do, and that's pitch for contact, right? And not only that, but pitch for weak contact. And you know, we're going to get into the story injury, but there's going to be something in the back of these starters' minds if the defense starts to follow suit as it was in 2023, with those as abysmal as they were, that the confidence on the mound changes. And when does it become a mental game on the mound where it's like, well, maybe I do rely on the fastball a little bit more than Bailey wants me to. Maybe I do look for pitches. I mean, to throw a sweeper 8 times in a row, that just tells me that the confidence level is just down. This is the only thing I can get across the plate. Let me just zoom it in there and see what happens. And although he's, you know, getting the numbers that are really great, it's just, I don't know how sustainable it is, you know?
Yeah. I'm excited to see where that continues to go. And, you know, obviously we're facing the Angels again, which we just had very dominant performances against. So should be interesting to see if we can continue that against them this coming weekend. another couple of exciting comments. Tyler O'Neill he crushed a home run in the first game of this series, which made him the first player in Red Sox history with at least 5 home runs and a .500 on-base percentage through the team's first 10 games. O'Neill leads the majors at that time in slugging percentage, .893, OPS at .1407, and was tied for the lead in home runs. I think he then hit one more. He has 6 home runs now, so he's still believe in first place. Let me double check on.
I believe he is. I believe he's still in first place on the homers, and O'Neill has really solidified as someone who's going to, you know, also with injuries, who's going to be in this lineup. He has to be in this lineup. What he's doing at the plate is fantastic, and he's off to a hot start. But also he's another presence in the outfield, where there's some speed and there's some talent out there, where other guys might be asked to do other things. Sidon Rafael might be, you know, moved into the infield, you know, at some point. We saw that, I believe, tonight a little bit. I think those are things that we're going to kind of see more as Breslow made the comments of, we're going to look internally how to replace Trevor Story, right? Once again, everything's internal. Everything's internal. The offseason was internal. And it's just getting to a point where I just don't want the train to get too far off the tracks. We're still above .500 team, right? We're only now into our 4th series of the season. So, you know, we're going to have to see what Breslow's got up his sleeve.
Yeah, I mean, we're in 4th place still. 1 game above .500. We probably should. Hold on 1 second. I got a really bad call.
There we go. Let the hate out, man.
My voice is giving out, man. This is not great. We probably should be at least 2 games over .500 right now. But
yeah,
some late inning blow. We lost these games late in innings, and it's indefensible, but it's caused by bad defense. Like the Chris Martin inning last night. Bad defense. Tonight, Pablo Reyes makes an error, followed up by David Hamilton missing second base on an easy double play. Like, what was that?
David Hamilton, to me, just looks like a guy who just looks like a deer in headlights sometimes. Like, when they pan to him in the Nesson broadcast and he's at short, there's just like this stare in his eyes, and it's really concerning. If I'm being honest, I mean, I get it, guys who, you know, bounce around majors, minors, back up and down, you know, doing that, that juggle. I get it's uncomfortable, but you're asked to be a big leaguer, right? And to carry yourself as a big leaguer. And, you know, I don't know how much expectations you should have for a guy like David Hamilton, but at least to make a routine touch second base on a double play. I mean, these are things that just have to happen. Just have to.
Like, ever since Trevor's Story went down, it's been one thing after another, and it's just been like the worst defense we've ever seen. And it's funny because the only person who's playing good defense is Saint-On Rafaela. We can't have him play every position.
He can't.
You gotta have some other guys. Like tonight, they tried. They really did try to have him play every position, but you just can't.
And I hope when Vaughn comes back, right, he starts his rehab assignment, tomorrow, right? You know, and then Rob, Ref Snyder, he adds another, you know, I guess outfield option, right? If we have to move Sedan into the shortstop role. I'm not completely given up. And I know this was kind of something that was disputed and debated on Sox Twitter of should Sedan come into and play shortstop. And I get how valuable he is in center field. I do understand that. And listen, you can argue he won us two games in center field out in Oakland. However, we need someone who could play the position of shortstop. We cannot run into a 2023 again where we have a carousel of just people who cannot play the position. It like I said before, it hurts all momentum. It hurts all confidence on the mound. The game plan that Bailey is now working with goes out the window, because now you don't have a defense with pitchers who are, you know, pitching for that contact.
Romy Gonzalez might have been the answer to that. He made a really great play last night in the ninth inning, which ended up being the play that hurt his wrist. I guess he's getting an MRI to see if there's any damage, but he made this amazing sliding play, stood up, just perfect throw to Costas. A little too late to get the runner at first, but it was a great defensive play. Pablo Reyes at shortstop, he just doesn't have the range of most typical shortstops. Like, balls are getting by him that you just would expect a shortstop to get to. Sometimes some of them aren't even errors, but they're just balls that just weren't gotten, like they didn't get to him. So between him and Valdez, there's like zero range there between short and second. Like, these guys can't go anywhere. No wrist moves.
Yeah, no, I agree, because, you know, Trevor Story was making plays in the small sample size that we had that really weren't easy, right? But because to have a guy who is such a solid defender, he made those plays look very routine. And then you take someone who's a couple tiers below that, and you're seeing balls get through the infield, and it's because of a lack of range. And it really just, I don't know, it just kind of digs that knife in a little bit deeper with losing Trevor for the year.
Yeah. In your opinion, would you move Sedan to second base or shortstop to try to solve up some of these defensive holes?
Yeah, I would move him to shortstop. I'm going to be honest. I listened to Lou's little rant, right? Walk the dog rant. And I thought he made a lot of good points. And you know, Durant is a good center fielder. He's got great speed. He showed growth in the position last year. And I know that he's had his blunders out in center field. And, you know, we're also going to speak to other things with Durant, however, but I think he can hold down center. I really do. And if Vaughn gets healthy and he can come back in, and you have a tandem of Sadan and Vaughn up the middle, that's a major upgrade. Like, yeah, losing Story hurts, but all of a sudden you have someone at the shortstop position that can actually play it. And then you have a second baseman, although that he's growing in his own right as a player, as a ball player, you know, he defensively can you know, maybe secure that second base role. So up the middle with those two guys, young guys, I would feel pretty more comfortable than what we're running out right now.
Yeah, and we've got Sadan for a long time. We didn't talk about it since our last recording. Red Sox came to an 8-year extension agreement, yes, with Sadan Rafaela. $54 million, or was it just 50? I can't remember.
850, wasn't it?
8 for 50. Sounds about right. So it buys out two free agent years, locks him in at about $6.25 million per year against a luxury tax. So not necessarily, you know, not robbing anybody, and it's definitely an overpay for what he'd be making right now. But they're thinking about long-term, someone who can solidify, you know, a defensive first position, provide elite defense, and if his hitting can just get up to league average, then that's going to be worth far more than $6 million when it comes time to actually being impactful. So,
And I love the fact, I think it's a great move, and I love to, you know, once again, I keep speaking to the confidence of him, because I believe that the quote that he had, and I'm paraphrasing, was, you know, they asked them about the, I guess, the term, right? The 8 years. And he goes, well, you know, by that time, I'll at least have one, you know, world championship. And I just, you know, the kid's just oozing of confidence. And that's another reason why I would put him at short, if I'm being honest. I mean, I know he can play the outfield position. I know he could play center. But we're running into a debacle in the infield, you know, the middle infield in particular. And if this kid wants to go out and show that he can do whatever he can do, let him do it. I mean, what's the alternative right now? You know, is it running Pablo out there? Is it running, you know, Emmanuel out there? It's just, I don't buy it.
I know tonight at the game, Theo Epstein was sitting next to Craig Breslow up in the booth.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that they're sitting there watching this defense going out every single night and just playing like this and thinking, this is fine. Everything's fine. Like, there's no way.
There's no shot.
There's no way.
There's no shot.
I know some people have thrown out, you know, trading for like Willy Adames from the Brewers, who's a shortstop on an expiring contract. Or, you know, we have Jose Iglesias is playing in the minor leagues with the Mets, like snacking him up because he's a defensive first shortstop.
Yeah.
Someone that can fill that void. And literally, even if they didn't hit at all, it'd be better than what we have running out there right now, just in defensive runs.
I know this is probably taken with a grain of salt and even some joking, but with the way that the Astros have started, it's like I even saw Bregman's name thrown around a little bit, you know, and I know that's definitely probably a joke and more for just riling people up on Sox Twitters, but Adames and even Iglesias or who else is out there? Seguro, right? Or right? Am I saying that right? Yeah. You know, these are guys that can come in right away and immediately upgrade at that position. And if it means you keep Sadan in center and you already have a pretty talented outfield with O'Neill and Duran in the corners, you know, at this point, why not? You know, the whole narrative of, you know, we're going to keep this thing internal. It, to me, it's like, okay, then you're complacent right now. Like you're just okay. And once again, we're an over 500 team, and we could easily have at least two more wins than what we have now. I just don't want to see them just kind of, you know, just slam on the brakes. You know, let's try to switch it up while it's early.
So on top of kind of the lack of depth in the infield position right now that we're seeing at shortstop, we were depending a lot on Trevor Story to be here and be healthy. And now we've gotten the official news that he's going to be out for the season. So it's no longer a guessing game of, is he just going to be a couple of weeks, a month? Like, how long do we need to figure this out for? We know now he's out for the whole season. So this has definitely got to be a, you know, a solution to look into and figure out what are our options there. We found out as well before the game on Tuesday that Nick Pivetta is placed on the 15-day IL with a elbow flexor strain. Yeah. Not ideal, but apparently they're saying it's mild, and that he might not be on the IL longer than his 15-day mark, which would be really, really perfect. But he's going to miss at least two turns, if not three turns, through the rotation. Red Sox currently called up Brennan Bernardino back up to the major league roster with an expectation that they're going to call up Cooper Criswell for a spot start on probably on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Fill in.
Fill in.
So that was another person the Red Sox were going to be depending on to at least throw 180 plus innings, right? And we're already off to a slow start with that. He was also someone who currently has he's given up one run the entire season. Yeah. Absolutely dominant. I think it was that one home run that he gave up in the first game. Otherwise just has looked phenomenal. I mean, all the starters have, but I bet specifically, it's a big blow. And I think any team losing that type of pitching would feel it's a big blow. I know that I can't remember the exact number. I think it's since June I talked about it in the last podcast, but since June, he's like been top three in the MLB in like all these major categories.
Yeah.
In pitching. And that's in the entire league since June of last year. So it's 100 inning sample size. So take that what you will, but we just lost, you know, one of the best three pitchers in all of baseball for who knows how long. I hope that we have a speedy recovery, but this is starting to expose the lack of starting pitching depth that we have already. And it's not even 20 games into the season.
Yeah, not even 20 games into the season. And listen, we were relying on, you hit the nail on the head, that it was going to be the workhorse, right? And Giolito was also brought in to be a workhorse. And yep. And now we're 0-2. And I hope Pivetta I believe it was retroactive to the 6th, whatever, 15 days, you know, he's going to miss at least two turns in the rotation. But we're starting to really expose what Breslow comments were this offseason, where we need at least one or two starters. And we're like, what, net minus two now or something like that? It's like, it's just not ideal. And Cooper Criswell, he's a guy that I know a lot of people aren't extremely high on, and I understand those concerns and what have you. But another guy who's been working close with Bailey, and if anything that's shown us early in this season, is the game plans that, you know, Bailey has for these pitchers. So if Cooper can come in and be serviceable, you know, in a spot start, he's probably going to have to do it maybe once, maybe twice. I guess, you know, like what's our, you know, once again, you know, kind of speaking to like the defense again, what's our other options? We don't really have any right now. So I'm not going to derail the train. It's just going to be like, all right, you know, Cooper's got to start too and come in. And if he can give us, you know, 5-6 innings of solid pitching and we can put some runs on the board, then I think we'll be all right.
That's been the biggest problem, is putting runs on the board up to this point. You know, we have a lot of these low scoring games that we just can't figure out how to score them. But getting to this Orioles series, we're finally putting up some runs on the board, like three runs in the first couple innings against, you know, them in the opening day, the home opener. We have Bayo on the mound. We're feeling great. You know, in the second game, we go up 5-0 with Cutter leaving in the fifth inning, right? Tonight, we're leading as well. So I think it's a good thing that the offense is finally starting to put up some runs. If we can get the defense figured out, I think that helps the pitching out a lot.
Oh, absolutely. And
like the defense, that's why, you know, the title of this episode is indefensible. Like the defense that we are putting out on the field is literally indefensible and needs to be corrected immediately. We cannot do this again, and it will be the death of us all. And even, you know, they know this too. You know, Tom Warner was saying this offseason that they felt that if they were a better defensive team, they would be maybe 11 wins better last season. We're seeing already again this year. Like, that's easily 4 wins that we could have been better with, a little bit better defense or you know, Joely Rodriguez not pitching.
Yeah.
You know, early. And early.
I think we need to understand that what is this front office made of? right? What is Breslau really made of, right? And, you know, this is a chance to kind of nip it in the bud right away. We do not, you know, the last three games defensively was just way too eerie of last year.
Hold on, can I just stop you there? What did you just say? Did you say nip it in the butt?
Nip it in the bud?
In the bud? Okay. So yeah. Like, random side story. I always used to think that it was nip it in the butt. Yeah. And I don't know why I thought that. Like, no one ever told me it was that. I just maybe always heard it as nip it in the butt.
I always heard it, and then someone corrected me like a couple years ago, and they're like, dude, why do you keep saying butt? And I'm like, what is it? And they're like, it's butt. And I'm like, I had no freaking clue. I've been on this planet 34 years. I had no idea.
Yeah. So I misheard it again just now, but I just called myself out on that one because literally I thought you were like, yeah, we just got to nip it in the butt. And I was going to be like, my guy, someone else says it too.
My guy.
Yeah, nipping it in the butt. Oh yeah.
Nipping it in the butt. Dude, like, but seriously, this is, you know, if you knew it was an issue last year, then the leash, right? Like the hypothetical leash needs to be short. Like it needs to be short. And I know the comments right after, you know, announcing Story's injury was, you know, internal. I'm going to keep beating this to death. There is no internal. You know, unless you move Sidon to short, that's it. What other internal options?
No, I mean, I think that's I just saw the news come through that Romy Gonzalez is day to day, but he did not have a fracture, so that's good news.
Okay, good.
Evers is still day to day. So at least, you know, with Devers out there at third, I mean, it's not that much better, but it's better than Pablo Reyes, like someone who can at least make a good play once in a while. You know what I mean? Probably Gonzalez, if he can get back in there, then that's okay. But
you're not going to pay Devers over $30 million a year to just be a DH at this point, right? Like that, there will come a time where you know, Devers' inconsistency defensively at third base is going to be, you know, really talked about and really, you know, hammered in. Is when does he slide into that full-time DH role and kind of step into the big poppy shoes? But you're not paying that guy over $30 million a year for him to just swing it back.
He kind of does need an IL stint right now, though. His shoulder doesn't feel – it's not right. He's been hurt since he came back. He's gotten like two hits since he's been back from his, you know, 2 days sitting out in Seattle. He's walked six times, but he hasn't hit. And so his average looks like garbage. I think one of those hits was a home run, but that was pretty much it. That's pretty much all he's done. And Cora said today he knows his swing doesn't look the same as it looked in the spring. He said that if you an IL stint right now, it'd be better to do it now than to grind through it because it's too early in the season to be grinding, he said.
Yes.
So, yes. You know, I agree. It's early in April. It just sucks to hear that after we just had Trevor Story go down and we just had all this happen. It's like, oh, you mean Devers is going to go down too? Like, the season's already over.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, we're going to wait and see about all that stuff. There is a couple of positives that I did want to talk about. So you already mentioned it briefly. We got Grissom starting his rehab tomorrow. We have Rob Revsteiner already started his rehab, right? Who knew that Rob Revsteiner coming in to save the day would be something that they'll be looking at. But that if he's able to come back in and they don't want to put, you know, Abreu back down and they don't want to put Romy Gonzalez back down, then – you know, your options are very limited here, right? So it just depends on who they're going to be moving around. So we got some reinforcements coming there. I hope that Grissom comes back in his full, it's like 20 days that he spends in the minors because that's his rehab assignment. And that'll be like the length of his spring training. So 20 days, he should be back up, if not sooner. He's already at no limitations right now. So it's just a matter of getting at bats, which is great for him. Another great thing that came out of this series was again the reinforcement of Justin Slayton being the beast that he is.
Lights out.
Standing by him being my rookie of the year for the Red Sox pick in our predictions episode. he's only given up one hit in his big league career. And do you remember what hit that was?
Was that J-Rod?
It was. Since coming in his debut with the bases loaded in extra innings, he hasn't given up a hit. And he still has a 0 ERA. He's got like 7 strikeouts. and he's pitched like 7.1 innings or something.
Pounding the strike zone. I mean, just absolutely pounding the strike zone. You know, something that, you know, I don't know if he kind of maybe sat down at some point with Chris Martin, who did not have a good, you know, outing. But he's a guy who comes in.
Not his fault, by the way.
Yeah, not his fault. Not his fault. I mean, there was a couple pitches that got a little bit out of his hand, and then Wong had some miscues behind the plate as well. Some balls that got past them. But, you know, these, if you have two guys at the back end of your bullpen that are going to come in and what do we always say? Throw strikes. Just come in and throw strikes. Don't put guys on base. No unnecessary, guys, you know, sprinting around the bases. Come in, pound the strike zone. And this kid, he, once again, I believe he was with the Rangers, right? And he was a Rule 5 guy. And the fact that the Rangers, who snag arms left and right, were just okay and complacent with letting this guy, I'm cool with it, because he's been looking like a stud.
Yeah, I like everything that he brings to the table. Calm, cool, collected out there. He throws strikes. I feel like he would be an amazing closer, potentially, if not, you know, by the end of this year. But, you know, that's because our current closer doesn't throw strikes. So, you know, by the miracle of God, Kenley Jansen still has a zero ERA.
Zero. This season. Yeah.
I don't know how it's possible. He has more walks than innings pitched. Yeah. And he told us the other day, he said, I'm going to stop walking, guys. Spring training is over. And then he went out and did this crap again tonight. Like, what are we doing to him? I can't even blame him, because did you see what happened at the beginning of that inning? So ninth inning started. And if you remember, it was Connor Wong had just tied it in the eighth.
Yes.
So he hit that massive homer over the monster, tie game, going to the ninth inning. Greg Weiser had come out to pitch the last out of the inning before. And so Weiser stayed in the game. He went back out on the mound in the ninth inning. And Kenley, they swung open the bullpen doors. The lights dimmed down. They played his intro video and his music on the loudspeakers. And they started to do his light show. He literally throws his final warm-up pitch, gets a fist bump from the bullpen guy, starts to jog out in the field, gets two steps onto the field, and then is like, whoa, hold on.
Yeah,
and like, hold backs on. Back up. And like, that probably threw off his mojo a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's like, you're the closer, and we're not even going to give you a clean inning against our right.
Yeah, we're not going to give you a clean inning. And I think, our buddy Ed Hand, put out a tweet with just, you know, the way that us as fans have talked about Kenley since the start of the season. And then this is why, I guess, numbers always don't paint the full picture, right? Like, you know, there is a – baseball is a very analytical game, right? It is – it comes down to numbers, percentages, advantages, disadvantages. But Kenley, you know, we were all ready to, like, you know, pack this guy's bag and send him out of Logan Airport. And you know, it hasn't been pretty, but I mean, the numbers are there. I mean, what would you say? More walks than innings pitched? Yeah, that's not ideal on any baseball team. So, you know, hopefully
someone who, like, he can't keep a runner from stealing either. So, like, for a guy who's like, can't, walking people is like the worst nightmare for any situation.
They take a second. You walk the guy first, they're going to second within a few pitches.
Yeah, he got so lucky that they turned a double play on him, because literally the pitch before that, Mullins stole. He would have had the base stolen by a mile, but then he got, I think Santander, like, fouled it off. And then the next pitch was when he grounded into double play and Mullins didn't run. So I was like, should have done it, man. Maybe I might have my inning mixed up with another guy, because now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think Kenley faced Couser, and that would have been who was batting after Mullins. Yeah. So I don't know what I'm talking about, but there was someone who was trying to steal second against Kenley and didn't end up doing it. So All right. A couple other things that I wanted to note. I'd like to see Casas's. Casas had a couple of hits this series, a home run over the monster. He looked good.
That was an impressive shot. That was impressive.
I want to say his last eight games, he has his last 10 at bats, an OPS over 1,000 or something like that. So,
yeah. And I was one to say it, you know, in the beginning where, you know, everybody was afraid, hey, you know, the kid's going to start slow again. And I'm like, nah, pump the brakes, you know, just give it a little bit of time. And I think he's starting to understand his own strike zone. He's been on a lot of at bats where, you know, pitches are just outside the zone, right? I'm not saying blatantly outside the zone, although we've seen a few of those as well. But just outside, Casas is a guy who, when he's in the box, he knows exactly where the ball is at almost at all times. And it's really impressive to have that eye. That shot that he hit over the monster was his opposite field power is just incredible.
Yeah, no, Casas has been heating up, which is really exciting to see. Need to see more home runs from him. Obviously, there's two series in a row where he was able to go deep. The Red Sox catching tandem continues to be the top three catching tandems in baseball, between Reese McGuire being on fire and Connor Wong coming in, hitting a homer today. They're top three in every offensive category at batting average, RBIs, OPS. There was something else too. Just phenomenal job from those guys holding it down and just providing us, you know, offensive catching options, which is really, really cool. And makes me less encouraged that we'll see Kyle Teal this season unless something dramatic happens. I don't see them getting rid of either of those guys.
Yeah, I don't see them moving from either one of those guys. And you know, rightfully so at this moment. And maybe it just gives Teal a little bit more time to, you know, get his ABs down in the minors.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously Duran looked great in this series too. Like, he had a lot of hits. Today he had two doubles. I think he had three hits in total. He had two hits in the opener, two singles. He had two hits in the second game. I'm not sure. I can't remember if he had any hits in the opener or not. But he looked really good at the plate. But, you know, there was one situation that had come up in the opening day game where Duran went to play a ball in the corner, left field, kind of in the shadows. Ball was right at him, and he just dropped it. Basically did what Sedan did in the A series, where the ball was right at him, and he just dropped it. After the game, he was asked if it was because of shadows. He was like, no, it's on me. It was on me. Another reporter had tweeted out that he was punching his locker repeatedly, saying, you know, explicit things like, you know, it's my bleeping fault, you know, and just over and over again, punching his locker. And that spawned a lot of people to, you know, kind of throw some backlash at the reporter for saying, hey, should you really have put out, you know, Duran's personal was that really the smartest? But also, you know, a lot of people saying like, hey, we appreciate you taking accountability for your actions. Like, hey, like we love having someone who cares that much. And there was another section of people that were like, hey, Duran struggles with mental health. Like, he's been very public about like his mental health and mental well-being. And so we're concerned that, you know, he's showing the signs of someone who's taking things maybe a little too seriously. So I know that there had been, you know, some tweets that have been put out online that were saying, hey, we need to stand behind, you know, we need to stand behind Duran in this situation. And we need to make sure that we have his back at all times. And, you know, it was thrown out there like, why don't we give him a standing ovation the next time that he bats, and you know, try and get him some encouragement, make him feel the love, you know, get behind him, stand behind him. The original person that had posted it was G-Mags on Twitter. The at is at BonerJams03. phenomenal. G-Mags is his handle. But he had posted that. His original tweet got 209,000 views. We hopped on it. Shout out to Tim for wanting to see if we could get a way to promote this as well. So we had Lauren from our graphics team make up a graphic talking about how we appreciate Jaren. We try to get people to be encouraged to give him a standing ovation at the game. We got some traction on our post on Twitter. He's trying to get as many people to share and stand behind it. Shout out to the Play Tessie Boys, some of the other podcasts on the Red Sox network, as you know, the Red Sox Twitter space as well, for getting behind that message. So the game comes around, and it's first pitch, and there's like no one in the ballpark. Ballpark's like half empty. We had a couple guys from the podcast that were actually at the game. They said that it was meh, like,
yeah,
standing ovation. Like, there were some people that did it, but it was definitely a pretty meh reaction. But he ended up getting 2-for-4 in that game. So he had a good game at the plate, which was good to see. What were your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Yeah, I just want to speak to Durant's mental health. You know, some things are bigger than sports. Some things, and listen, Jaren is he's a very emotional guy. I remember when he was first called up, you know, people thought that he had kind of a smart tongue on him, and you know, his attitude was a little brass, right? And then the more we learned about him, we learned really about his struggles, and really what makes us as individuals is what we're struggling in. And you know, just because a guy is a professional athlete battling his own demons, you know, I really applaud his efforts and to be a little bit more vocal about that. You know, like, there's no one who's going to be a bigger critic on ourselves than ourselves, right? Like, we are our biggest critics. And you know, yeah, should the news gotten out about him and his locker, you know, punching and screaming expletives and this is my fault, I don't know, some of that stuff, to me, there's like this, like, you know, kind of fine line where it's like, maybe that we just keep that in-house. But then if we don't keep it in-house, then we don't know about it. We don't know how to react to it as fans and stand behind him and show him encouragement and support and know that, hey, listen, no matter what you're going through, you know, the accountability that you're showing, the growth that you're showing, you know, some things are just bigger than baseball and mental health, you know, especially for me, being a part of this group with the Pesky Report, and you know, Tim hopping on that GMAX bandwagon with the post, and Lauren with the graphic. It's just a nice thing to be a part of. It's just something when you go to bed at night, you're like, you know what, that was cool, you know. And I don't think it went for nothing. I think it was a nice gesture.
Yeah, I mean,
don't go down on me, man.
My throat.
Don't go down on me, man.
Just getting emotional thinking about it, you know.
Yeah. Don't go down on me.
We know that Jaren got the messages as well, because he had seen a couple of the posts that people had made about it.
Yeah.
But there were a few people that felt that perhaps we were babying him a little bit, and that he was totally fine. He was, you know, his reaction was totally normal with based on who he is as a person, and that he's totally over it. One of those people is a very famous Red Sox personality, perhaps the most famous Red Sox personality, Mr. Jared Carabas. And here's his take on Baseball is Dead, his national baseball podcast, talking about this situation on the show from yesterday.
So you almost hope that it's a Philadelphia Trey Turner situation, like where it's just the fans wrap their arms around the whole team and are like, all right, hey, you know what? You're right. Bednar. He's a dude. He's our dude.
They're trying
two-time
to
All-Star, led the fucking league in saves last year. Like, let's not forget this.
They're trying to do that in Boston right now, and it's really pissing me off.
What? Trying to...
Jaren Duran dropped a fly ball yesterday, and it led to run scoring. And, like, there was a reporter that tweeted out that he, like, punched his locker and said that, like, I suck and blah, blah, and, like, it's my fault. He's being accountable, and obviously he's pissed that he made a bad play. But now, like, Red Sox fans are like, we got to do a standing ovation. It's like, he's hitting .370 with, like, an OPS over 1,000. Like, we save the fucking standing ovation for a dude that's, like, really dragging ass and struggling. And, like, he's one of the most beloved players. Like, it's not like he didn't get booed. Like, I think Duran himself, if I asked him, like, hey, do you think that's a little over the top? He would be like, yeah, like, I'm a meathead. I pulled a nutty. And then I went home and I was fine, like, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like that everyone saw the Trey Turner thing work, and they're like, all right, standing ovation. Like, no.
So.
Yeah. I'm glad you waited to show me that. I love Jared. I'm not going to speak anything bad on Karabas, and he does have a point. He does have a point that, you know, Durant is a beloved player on this team. He's playing at a very high level right now, and what have you. I don't see anything wrong with a little bit of encouragement. And I also don't believe the whole I'm just going to go home and rub one out and you know, go to sleep the meathead, you know, because he's shown another side of him. He's shown another side of him that is a little bit more vulnerable, that is a little bit more passionate. And I'm not saying that speaking towards any sort of mental struggles that he had. Listen, I don't think it's a crime, dude. I don't care if you're freaking Teddy ball game, man, you know, and you want to give him a standing O, you know, and he's the most beloved players in Red Sox history. You do it. You do it. You know, you attract more bees with honey than vinegar, right? The old saying or whatever. So, you know, let's just try to keep it a little positive.
Yeah, I think there's a balance as well, because what wasn't mentioned in that was his known and public struggles with mental health, right?
Yeah.
So I think that that's where it definitely does come into where we need to be sensitive of those things. And like, if you have a friend that you know that struggles and you see them like beating up on themselves, right? Are you going to be like, oh, they're going to be fine, they're going to get over it? Maybe. But maybe this is the one time they don't, right?
Yeah.
And like, I'm not. You might think. Right. And like, you might think everything's fine with them because, yeah, they just got promoted at work and like they have a family and they have kids and like, oh, everything's going great. So, you know, they can't be serious with them. Like, what could they have going on that would be so bad? But that's when people need you the most to check in. Right. And it doesn't take that much for you to check in, but it can cost you everything if you don't. And I think like that's ultimately like what it comes down to. And like that, this movement was a great idea.
I agree with that 1,000%. You know, how many stories do we hear about whether it's professional athletes, whether it's actors, actresses, you know, musicians, and it's the one time someone doesn't check. It's the one time somebody doesn't check and something bad happens. And so now I'm not taking back the fact that, you know, things were started within our little inner circle. I think that was I think it was a nice gesture.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously, if you or anyone else that you know is struggling with mental health or concerns about, you know, your well-being, please, please, please get help. And don't be afraid to ask. Like, so many people are there to support you. People love you. People care about you. And the world is a better place with you in it. Yeah, I think that's...
No, it's well said.
Obviously, we're not here to speak like, you know, from a professional perspective, but you know, I think that's something that needed to be said. So,
absolutely, I applaud it.
On the same somber topic, what did you think about? This is going to be a terrible transition. What did you think about the 2004 ceremony and the Tim Wakefield memorial at the beginning of opening day?
Listen, you know, opening day rolls around and I'm laying on the couch. I had a little bit of a stomach bug, whatever. I'm running back and forth from the bathroom and I got nothing on, and I'm fighting back tears, man, and not trying to make this, you know, just a freaking complete sob fest, but it was tough. It was absolutely tough, you know, seeing the 04 team and hearing like Kevin Millar and Johnny Damon and all these guys that they brought into the booth and how they talk about the team, right? Like how they talked about it was a group of guys who would do anything for each other, who had each other's backs through thick and thin, who still have, you know, Tim Wakefield's children's, you know, backs, and you know, they were laughing about his daughter. You know, if she ever brings a boy home, there's going to be 17 uncles on the front lawn, you know, ready to scrap. Yeah. And, you know, I thought that was funny because I think about, you know, my friends with my daughter and we, that's how we talk. Right. And my friends, we've been friends for 30 years and it's just the camaraderie and the brotherhood that comes with that 0-4 team is just, it's really, really impressive. It's absolutely impressive. So it was very somber, fighting back tears. Even seeing the video of Tim Wakefield's daughter explaining how her father taught her how to throw the knuckle, right? And she's explaining, you know, where you put the index finger and where you put the middle finger and how you grip the ball. It was just, oh my God, man. It was tough. But then also seeing the smiles. Oh, I do want to end on a high note. Seeing the guys joke around, seeing the personality, seeing Manny there, hearing Manny say, hey, listen, you know, I'm opening the signing the contract. I need 400 hits for 3,000 and joking around and, you know, Poppy and Manny talking about their sons and the successes that they're having, you know, playing the game. It's just, it's really cool. Trot Nixon in the booth was freaking awesome. So just kind of a bittersweet.
Yeah, I missed most of the commentary from the first half of the game because I was working until like 3:30, and then I had to drive home. Now I'm just listening to WEEI on the way home. So I missed probably up until like 4 o'clock was when I got home, and I was able to watch the rest of the broadcast. And I was able to at least tune into the pregame ceremony pretty good. It was great. I liked it. Would have been cool to be there in person. I think it was probably pretty awesome for those people that were able to be there. The place looked packed. There was a cool flyover. You know, obviously really cool to see all of those guys walking out of the field again. But I think the Wakefield stuff made it even more special because they would have celebrated this 2014 anyways, but being able to turn the attention away from those guys and turn it to their teammate, I think made it a more memorable experience. Because as much as we want to celebrate those guys, like, you know, you see what happened with Curt Schilling. Like, some of these guys, they're not necessarily the people that, like, you know, 20 years later, you remember them being, right? With the exception of David Ortiz, who's the exact same, and Kevin Millar, and these guys, you know what I mean? But I think to be able to make it less about those guys and have it be like, wow, look at all these guys that are here supporting the Wakefield family, right? And I think that was really cool to see. And yeah, it was pretty sweet. I was surprised. I saw Terry Francona was at, so that was a little bit confusing. He was in Boston like the day before, but then he didn't attend for personal reasons, he said.
Yeah, he said he didn't attend for personal reasons. I know even up until tomorrow, they had a Red Sox, the woman, and I'm gonna blank on her name, but she runs a lot of the funds and the marketing. They're gonna be doing a dinner tomorrow night. So I know that there were a lot of the players were hanging around the entire week in Boston, and for whatever reason, Tito, you know, didn't want to be on the field, and I'm sure he has his reasons for that. But it was kind of weird because we knew he was in the area, but obviously not part of the celebration.
Yeah, he was there taking pictures, doing press like the day before.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see Manny coming back. Manny's such a character.
Such a character, man.
Mike Timlin. It's cool to see him. Derek Lowe. Good to see those guys. Like you said, Trot Nixon, who, by the way, I think today is his birthday and Jason Varitek's birthday because they have the same birthday.
That's wild. Wow.
So happy birthday to Jason Varitek and Trot Nixon, and glad you could be back in Boston to celebrate 20 years. It's pretty
very,
cool.
Very cool. I'm sure they're going to throw back some drinks, and there's going to be some funny posts over the next few days, and that'll leak out, and hopefully they're remembering the Wakefields. You know, obviously, I'm sure they are. And you know, it was a very touching tribute as well.
The other person that was recognized at the ceremonies was Larry Lucchino. I don't know if we've mentioned it. I know we haven't on the podcast yet, but he passed away over last weekend. So obviously our thoughts and condolences are with the Lucchino family. Larry was a huge part of, you know, keeping Fenway Park where it is and kind of just making upgrades and modifications to it. A huge part of Camden Yards, Oracle Park, a bunch of other stadium renovations. Actually, sorry, I said Oracle Park. I meant Petco Park,
out in
San Diego. But also, you know, made the Woosock Stadium down there Polar Park, basically the gem of minor leagues. It's been the number one minor league farm, you know, stadium at all. It's awesome. And Larry did a lot for this team from a business perspective like that. And his architecture and experience there is very, very cool. So definitely a loss to the Red Sox family. And I'm glad they were able to recognize and honor him as well.
Yeah, Larry, from everything that I said, or I'm sorry, everything that I heard, was just an incredible human being. Just an incredible human being. I don't think the Red Sox get the championships that they had in the early 2000s without Larry and being part of the that front office and ownership group. And yeah, it was just another sad loss. Another sad loss. Did a lot for this organization. You muted.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks, man. So the last thing I was going to say was just around Jackson Holliday. So MLB's number one prospect, right? Ranked number one. Absolute fraud. He, this is MLB's number one prospect. Can't even get a hit off this, you know, bum team.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he faced Joely Rodriguez. He couldn't even get a hit. Like,
the crazy part is that he is going to torture us, right, for the next, you know, decade plus. And you know, for them, you know, I always took it. I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I always kind of took it a little personal when a team would call up a major prospect against the Sox, right? Like, it's kind of like, you know, your homecoming game in football in high school was always against a weaker opponent, right? So, mm-hmm. like, if you're bringing someone up on the big stage, it's kind of like a little subliminal FU. But yeah, Jackson Holliday so far a bust, but I'm sure he'll turn it around.
Yeah, I mean, first game out there, he drops a fly ball.
Today,
he dropped a fly ball that turned into a Costas double. He struck out against Jansen when the guy can't throw a strike. I think he struck out against Joely. Like, I'm telling you, guy's a complete fraud. In front of his dad.
Doesn't have it.
No, doesn't have it. His friend does have it. Roman Anthony.
Yes.
This is going to be my closing thought. I'm going to end with this. We're not going to do a series preview. We can just quickly predict what we think the series outcomes are going to be. We're not going to do like a pitching preview or anything like that. But Roman Anthony is very good friends with Jackson Holliday. In fact, they hit together in the offseason at Jackson Holliday's place. And Jackson Holliday says, "Hey, Roman is not far behind me." Yeah. And I can definitely concur with that. Was able to go and visit the Portland Sea Dogs for their home opener, which was supposed to be Friday, got snowed out. Then the game Saturday got snowed out. So the home opener ended up being Sunday. They let me exchange my tickets for Sunday. So I went. The game had less than 2,000 people there. So I got like general admission, but then by the fourth inning, I just moved up to literally dugout seats. Like, my feet were up on the dugout, the home dugout.
Awesome.
So I was sitting like literally right behind where they guys exit and enter. I was able to get like a picture with Roman before the game real quick. And he got two hits in that game. He was like the only of the three hits that they got. It was Roman had two and Marcelo had one. And that lineup is just so stacked down there, man.
So like, stacked.
Roman, Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Teal. And then you even go down Blaze Jordan. We got Nick York. Yeah. Like, these guys are just on fire, and it's crazy to see. I'm excited to go to more of those games as the season goes on. But I think Roman Anthony's not going to be long for Double A if he keeps hitting like that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think he's going to be the first one up.
It just makes sense, you know.
It makes sense. It makes too much sense.
Just unfortunate that it's like, well, where is he going to play if he comes out?
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like, well, who knows at the deadline, you know, that outfield gets a little crowded. Maybe, you know, a piece or two gets moved. And then, you know, depending on where the Sox are in the standings, he might get a couple at bats.
It's true. Also, side note, we were able to get approved for some press passes for Worcester to go down to Polar Park for the podcast. Nice. So some of the guys from the minor league crew might be able to be in person this year down in Worcester, which is pretty cool. So if we we'll get you guys potentially some exclusive content coming from that direction. I know we also were, we got approved for Greenville as well. I don't know how often we're going to be out there, but when we are, it's good to know we have that option. And we're working on talking to the Sea Dogs as well to see if we can get some access down there. Kevin, you have any final thoughts?
No, I don't. Let's just take two, right? From the Angels, and I'll be happy. Take two.
Yeah, I think they bounce back from a poor defensive showing and take two. I don't know that they take three because Reed Deppner is pitching against us again. Yes. And that guy just carves us up.
He carves us up, and he's got some elite stuff. But yeah, no, I would just take two or three, and I'll be happy.
Yeah, I am glad that Detmers is facing Hauk, though, because Hauk is also carving people
up. That's going to be a fun matchup. That will be a fun matchup.
Normally, Detmers faces Whitlock. Last time in Anaheim, this is actually the last thing I'll say. When Whitlock faced Detmers, it was the third time that they've been the opposing pitchers in the same game in their careers, which is like very rare considering pitching for I think Detmers has only played the Red Sox 10 times or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And three of those times he started against Garrett Whitlock. It's just super random. And it would have been another time had it not been for the injury to Nick Pivetta. So just super random there. Yeah. I think they're going to go 2 out of 3. So fingers crossed that they come out of this, you know, two games above 500 and keep moving in the right direction. And hopefully we get some news about some defensive replacements coming soon, because we can't continue like this. So make a stop. All right. Well, on behalf of the Pesky Report brought to you by Beyond the Monster, this has been episode 342. And once again, this is the official podcast of a team whose prospects don't suck. I hope everyone has a great week, and we will talk to you next time.